There's going to be Beth Ward from, let me get my notes. She's worked as a vaccine preventable disease epidemiologist for the Georgia Division of Public Health since 2004. She received her master's in public health from Emory, and prior to that, she received a bachelor's of science in nursing and worked as a nurse at the University of Virginia Medical Center. And she's going to talk today about varicella immunity among institutionalized adults in a long-term care facility.
Okay. Hello. You've just heard the guidelines for management of varicella outbreak investigations in various settings. Now I will present an outbreak of varicella that occurred in a long-term care facility in Georgia in the fall of 2008. In early September of last year, the Georgia Division of Public Health was notified of a case of varicella in a resident of a long-term care facility for developmentally disabled adults. For simplicity and to maintain anonymity, I will refer to the long-term care facility as Facility X through the rest of the presentation. The case patient reported to us shared a room with a roommate, and the roommate was diagnosed with shingles 2 weeks earlier. Facility X is part of a state hospital for institutionalized persons and houses developmentally disabled adults. A majority of the residents have lived in this type of facility for many years. Facility X consists of four suites, each with several bedrooms and a common area. Approximately 8 to 9 residents live in each suite, and residents typically share a bedroom with 1 to 3 roommates. Here's the floor plan for Facility X. Each quadrant is a suite. The pink box shows the common living area of one of the suites. The common living area is surrounded by resident bedrooms and other rooms such as administrative offices. Based on the setup of the facility, strict isolation rooms were not available. Varicella in this population is a significant event for a number of different reasons. First, it's a population with uncertain immunity to varicella because limited information is available on varicella immunity in institutionalized populations. Second, adults who are not immune and develop disease are potentially at risk for severe complications such as pneumonia, secondary bacterial infections, and central nervous system involvement, including encephalitis and aseptic meningitis. In addition, transmission is facilitated due to close living quarters and shared living spaces. Most of the patients had at least one roommate, but some had as many as 3, as mentioned in the previous slide. There were 2 objectives of the investigation. The first was to prevent additional cases through identifying and isolating cases and identifying and vaccinating non-immune Facility X residents and healthcare workers. The second objective was to assess varicella immunity among residents and healthcare workers born in the U.S. before 1980. The methods took place in 2 phases. First, it was necessary to determine varicella disease and vaccination histories in the residents and healthcare workers. For the residents, this was done by reviewing patient charts and through family and guardian telephone interviews. For healthcare worker staff, this was done by reviewing employee health records and conducting employee interviews. The second part of the methods phase took place by performing serologic testing on all healthcare workers and patients with unknown or no disease or vaccination history. Please note, we did not test everyone. Again, only those with an unknown or no disease vaccination history. After the specimens were collected, serologic testing was performed by Georgia Public Health Laboratory. Here's a summary of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices Guidelines to Determine Immunity to Varicella, as Stephanie covered a few minutes ago. These include diagnosis or verification of history or varicella or zoster by a healthcare provider, laboratory evidence of immunity or confirmation of disease, and documentation of age-appropriate vaccination with varicella vaccine. The guideline I'd like to highlight in the presentation today is the last mentioned which is birth in the U.S. before 1980. As the investigation proceeded, several outbreak containment measures were put into place. The first measure was immediate isolation of the index case after the initial report from the facility. Due to the facility setup, strict isolation was not possible, as mentioned earlier. Second, after serologic testing results were reported to us from the lab, we furloughed one non-immune healthcare worker from work for the duration of the disease incubation period. Next, we considered post-exposure prophylaxis for the residents and healthcare worker, and subsequently vaccinated 5 susceptible residents and the healthcare worker with the first dose of vaccine. They then received the second dose as per ACIP guidelines 4 weeks later. I'll elaborate on this point a little later in the presentation. Here are the guidelines for varicella post-exposure prophylaxis. When varicella occurs in a high-risk setting, such as a healthcare facility, persons without evidence of immunity should be offered varicella vaccine within 3 to 5 days of exposure to provide the greatest protection against developing disease. Post-exposure vaccination should be given as soon as possible after exposure, but vaccination is still indicated beyond 5 days because it induces protection against subsequent exposures. For persons without evidence of immunity who have contraindications to vaccination and are at high risk of severe disease, such as immunocompromised persons and pregnant women, administration of an investigational product, varicella zoster immune globulin, or VARIZIG, should be considered. If given, it must be administered within 96 hours of exposure. Now I'll present our results. In our investigation, we found that Facility X housed 34 residents. The median age of residents was 47 years, and a majority, or 71% of the residents, were male. 59 healthcare workers are in the facility and provide 24-hour-a-day care and supervision of the residents. The median age of the healthcare workers was 45 years, similar to the residents, but only 27% of the staff were males. This table displays reported varicella disease history among residents and healthcare workers born before and after 1980. The majority of residents and healthcare workers in Facility X were born before 1980 and would be considered presumptively immune by ACIP criteria. Of this group, born before 1980, only 9% of the residents and 50% of the healthcare workers had a documented or reported history of varicella disease. The healthcare workers born on or after 1980 with a positive varicella history had either documentation of disease and or documentation of vaccination. This table displays the serology results on residents and healthcare workers born before 1980 who were tested because they had no evidence of varicella immunity. Of this group, we found that most persons were immune, 83% of residents, and 96% of healthcare workers. This last table shows varicella immunity among residents and healthcare workers born before 1980 based on documented or reported history of disease and positive serology results from those tested. So in summary, considering both positive history of disease or vaccination and positive serology in both populations, only 85% of residents were immune, in contrast to 98% of healthcare workers. Given the ACIP criteria of birth in the U.S. prior to 1980 as criteria for immunity, we find the level of immunity in the resident population to be lower than expected. The following timeline summarizes the events that occurred in the investigation. On August 22nd, a shingles case was diagnosed. On September 4th, 2 weeks later, the roommate of the shingles case was diagnosed with varicella. On September 5th, A Friday afternoon, Georgia Public Health was notified of the varicella case. The investigation began and the index case was isolated. On September 8th, serologic testing began and was then completed on September 10th. On September 12th, one healthcare worker was determined to be non-immune, was furloughed from work, and along with five non-immune residents, was given the first dose of vaccine. Looking at this timeline, you can see we were not able to vaccinate within the 5 days to prevent disease from this exposure. And subsequently, as you can see on September 18th, the furloughed healthcare worker was diagnosed with varicella. So in summary, two cases of varicella resulted from exposure to a resident with shingles, and 15% of the residents born before 1980 were susceptible to varicella infection. We had a number of challenges in the investigation. First, it was difficult to determine histories to varicella because reporting reliability among residents was questionable due to their medical diagnoses. In addition, the residents' medical records were archived off-site, and no information on varicella immunity was documented in employee health records. The second challenge was the physical setup of the facility, which did not allow for strict isolation of the case patient. Our point of discussion is that high prevalence of non-immune residents may result from a sequestered population. Institutionalized adults may not have had the same opportunities for exposure to varicella as the general population. In conclusion, two cases of varicella linked to an institutional setting resulted from incomplete immunity among residents and staff. And our recommendations are as follows. First, adhere to ACIP guidelines to document varicella immunity among staff in institutional settings. Second, consider reappraisal of ACIP criteria for varicella immunity, birth before 1980, in residents of similar facilities. Third, isolate infectious residents and consider furlough of healthcare workers with no documentation of varicella immunity. Next, consider post-exposure prophylaxis for residents and healthcare workers. And last, administer two doses of varicella vaccine 4 to 6 weeks apart to persons with no evidence of immunity. I'd like to acknowledge the following individuals who were an integral part of the investigation in the long-term care facility. Thank you.
We have time for questions.
I was curious. I thought the criteria were born in the U.S. before 1980, and I was curious to know if any of your residents were born outside of the U.S. that you were investigating?
Some of the healthcare workers were born outside the U.S., yes.
Is that not the criteria? Is it born before 1980 or born in the U.S. before 1980?
Born in the U.S. before 1980.
Rafael Harpa, CDC. We actually were involved in a remarkably similar outbreak investigation at around the same time. So I just had two questions. One is, was there anything notable about the illness in the residents? Because we've had soft evidence that there might be not only more susceptibility to disease, but also that the severity is increased amongst people who are profoundly disabled on having nutritional issues and taking various medications. So that's one question. And the second question is, you've used the term healthcare workers and staff somewhat interchangeably, and I think those have important implications. So I just wanted to know, were most of your healthcare workers indeed healthcare workers, or were some of them people who are kind of circulating in and out to do second, just say a little bit more about that aspect.
Sure. To the first question, thankfully, the residents in this facility didn't really have any underlying medical conditions. So our case patient did have a primary case of varicella, but thankfully it wasn't a complicated course of illness. There was a neighboring facility. These residents didn't have contact with that population, but they were also developmentally disabled, but did have much more severe underlying medical conditions. So we were thankful it happened in the facility where it happened, if it had to happen. And then in response to the second question, we did test not only healthcare workers, but other staff members. But for the purposes of this presentation, I only presented the healthcare worker staff information. But we did look at, you know, the administrative staff as well. And for those who were considered healthcare workers, they were, you know, involved in patient care, was very hands-on.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jolie from Oklahoma City. And I do have a quick question for you. If you had had more cases in this facility, and say they were on separate wings or cohorts, with it being a developmental facility, we've run into problems to where they don't like to switch rooms with these cases because of the cognitive effect on them. What would you have done in this situation had it been, would you have recommended, we recommend that they move them all into one section, but did you have any thoughts or ideas that you had presented with the facility on what you would do if, in fact, there was another case in another area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we first heard about the case patient, unfortunately, it was a Friday afternoon, and so we weren't, aside from isolation, we weren't really able to move ahead with the investigation, but the initial thought was to go ahead and cohort patients based on, you know, susceptibility. So, you know, if we found, you know, residents that were susceptible, we would have tried to rearrange the rooms, you know, so that that group would have been together. But it was a challenge because the facility staff we're not used to that kind of response to a situation like that, and so it would have required a lot of work with the administration. So that had been a thought initially, and we definitely were thinking along those lines.